Peterson is taking care of things right now.
To Wesley Fields. Touchdown, Georgia Southern.
Pass swing on the way. It's gone! It is well with my stolen Montgomery! Georgia Southern wins!
All right, Georgia Southern fans, welcome to another episode of Georgia Southern Extra. I am Travis Jadon, the beat writer for Georgia Southern Athletics at the Savannah Morning News and SavannahNow.com. Got a big show for you guys today. We got Mike Anthony back on the podcast to discuss the latest with Georgia Southern. We'll discuss briefly his thoughts from the Minnesota game, as Mike was not able to be with us last week. And then we'll jump into what awaits Georgia Southern. We got some info on Wirtz Watch, a change at the safety position, which I touched on last week after the Minnesota game. And then we'll do kind of an extended outlook at this looming Louisiana game. Which just has really, really big implications within the Sun Belt Conference. At the end of the episode, you'll hear my interview with Louisiana's radio sideline reporter, Cody Juneau. Cody helps us scout the Raging Cajuns and their impressive 3-1 start heading into Statesboro. But we'll start this episode by giving Mike a chance to give his thoughts on the Minnesota loss and kind of some discussion on that, as he was unable to do it last week. This is, after all, an equal opportunity podcast. Mike, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, good to be back.
Yeah, good to have you back, Mikey Memory. Let's just jump right into it, man. What did you see from the Minnesota game? I know it's, you know, kind of a little ways removed at this point, but kind of what were your feelings coming out of that game?
Yeah, I mean, broad scope, broad view of it, it's just the latest in a long line of gut punches for this Georgia Southern team against P5 competition, where, you know, it's getting to be, if not a running joke, at least a running trend, where for all of Georgia Southern's past accomplishments and FCS and all that they've done even since getting to the FBS, they seem to be the one of that group of teams, you know, like your App States, like Boise and Troy before them, who can't quite seem to get over the hump when they play these biggest teams from the SEC, ACC, Pac-12, Big Ten. All those schools, and not only do they keep falling just a little bit short, it seems like in every one of these losses, there's a singular play that you can look at that's just one that's going to keep them up for years and years. I mean, you've got a few years ago at NC State, a fumble on the one where they were about to salt the game away. Later that same year against Georgia Tech, a call that everybody will still say was a forward pass because it was. It gets ruled a fumble. That gives possession back to Georgia Tech and allows them to win against Georgia in 2015. An inadvertent whistle on a muff punt gives the Bulldogs the ball back and, you know, their ability to tie the game up. And they're forever going to remember this Minnesota game for a 3rd and 30 on Minnesota's own 6 with just a couple minutes to go that they can't hold over 2 downs. And I mean, it's a little bit sickening, but, you know, at the same time, you look at it in the narrow scope of Georgia Southern. They didn't play their best game offensively. Granted, again, they were without some of their best weapons, but defensively, I thought they played pretty well. They were going up against some really good receivers that, you know, dealt some damage and especially did so in that final drive for Minnesota. But they also came up with some huge plays where they had to. And, you know, ultimately, when you're going to play a bigger team, a P5 team, it's not enough to get them down on the ground. You've got to make sure you knock them out. And once again, Georgia Southern just couldn't quite get that last punch.
Yeah, and I guess, you know, whenever I talked about the game, and, you know, it's hard sometimes right after the game or the day after the game, you have different feelings than you do, say, now, you know, a week removed, you know, over a week removed, I guess, at this point, from the game. You kind of start to look at it a little differently. But I guess for you, Mike, you know, what I said was that Georgia Southern almost won a game on the road against a Power 5 team, and they didn't look like the better football team, and they still almost won. So you can kind of look at that glass half full or glass half empty. Does that mean this is a good football team because you almost beat a Big Ten school on the road, and you probably played, you know, like your B-minus game, maybe even worse than that? Or was it kind of just more those two plays from Bird, Ellis and Brinson right there that kind of kept him in it? I guess when you came away from this game, did you think Georgia Southern was the better football team, or that they just had an opportunity to win the game?
I think that overall you have to say that Minnesota played the better game, and yet they were the ones that were lucky to win. Georgia Southern, you know, whether they were lucky to be in a position to win or not, they were the ones that had the advantage, and like I said, an almost insurmountable situation with a couple minutes left. But I see what you're saying, and I think that what a lot of people are looking at are the offensive stats, and you know, the biggest thing is two more fumbles, and that's something that Georgia Southern just didn't do last year. And not only did they do it again, they did it in you know, tough spots in the field where it not only took away scoring chances for them, but gave easy scoring chances to Minnesota. So to that point, yeah, that can't continue whether you're playing a Big Ten team, a Sun Belt team, or an FCS team. Those are always going to hurt you no matter what. But if you want to take the optimist view of it, I think that, you know, they had some drives where they got going. I think the offensive output was severely limited, A, by those turnovers, which, again, you can't have, but B, by the fact that if you watch option football, and I don't proclaim to be an expert on it, but I've watched it for over a decade now, and I have a little bit of an idea on how people defend it. It seemed like from the get-go, Minnesota was dead set, having seen what they saw Georgia Southern do against Maine, of saying that, you know, you're not pitching it to the outside. You're not rushing it quick to the outside. If they were going to win, it was going to have to be with Georgia Southern taking their backup quarterback and running him repeatedly into the linebacking core of Minnesota, either that or going over the top. And Georgia Southern, I think to their credit, had some good play calls and just weren't quite able to execute. So, yeah, they could have done more. If they had executed better, I think they would have done more and probably won that game. So there's plenty to be concerned about as far as how do you take advantage when you're in the right play call. But I think that as far as those who look at the rushing output and say that was a terrible game, they were held under 200 yards when they're supposed to be a rushing team and Minnesota giving up rushing yards, I think that that's selling Georgia Southern a little bit short. That was a Minnesota team with a coach that was familiar with what Georgia Southern does, and they were selling out against the big plays. If Georgia Southern was going to win that game, it was going to be going inch by inch.
Yeah, and I guess let's stick on that kind of point right there with Tomlin. A lot of people after this game, and last week we had Southern Pigskins' Jim Johnson on to kind of look at the Sun Belt as a whole, but he touched on the Minnesota game and what he saw out of it. He thinks that Georgia Southern wins that game if Shai Wirtz plays. Obviously, a lot of things would be different if a different player is playing quarterback for Georgia Southern. I don't know, better or worse, but it would be different. So I guess for you, if Wirtz plays, do you think that opens up kind of that middle running game for Georgia Southern against Minnesota? Do you think if Wirtz plays, they beat Minnesota? Because I'm not sure on that.
I don't think that necessarily having Wirtz in there would give Georgia Southern the plays to win or different plays to win. I think that it may have caused them to call some different plays, maybe some more aggressive plays. You know, we've talked over the last couple of weeks about, you know, how much trouble this offense is in. And I think that you and I are both in agreement that as Tomlin's shown more and more, it's gotten to be a little bit more of an ease to the coaches' minds that they know that they got at least one quarterback behind Shai Wirtz. Now, that said, you know, Wirtz was in Minnesota, but I don't think that anybody thought he was running onto that field.
Nah.
So you still are going in there with a quarterback, and if he gets hurt, if Tomlin gets hurt, you've got emergency contingency plans, and none of those are going to involve anything that you would practice in the game plan. So to that, I don't think that just the presence of Wirtz would make that a Georgia Southern victory. I do think that knowing what the coaches know now, that they have two quarterbacks that they can ride with, that having the option of putting your quarterback in a little bit more peril in order to get maybe a bigger play, maybe that causes them to call some different plays. I don't know what they saw or what they think they might have seen or think they might have had against different fronts. I'm just saying that maybe if it came up to where we have a 10 or 20% shot of pulling a big play here, but it's going to leave your quarterback hanging out to dry, you can maybe do that if you have two quarterbacks. You can't do it if you have just Tomlin ready to go.
Right, yeah. To that end, I guess I'll touch one more thing on Minnesota and give you the chance to respond. In the second half, and Tomlin led the team in carries with 14 against Minnesota. In the second half, I know they ran you know, very few plays. I think it was 12 plays in the second half. And obviously there are a lot of factors to that. It's not like Georgia Southern planned on running only 12 plays in the second half, but when you get two non-offensive touchdowns, obviously that shrinks the amount of reps. But I did have a problem with Logan Wright and J.D. King not getting a touch in the second half, not getting even one carry. If you're only running 12 plays, that limits it. But even if you're only running 12 plays, Logan Wright and J.D. King, I think, have to be two of those 12 plays at least. I guess for you, you know, in the second half of that game, kind of, you know, where did it go wrong for Georgia Southern? It seemed like so many things went right. But at the end, on that final drive, when Georgia Southern had only ran 12 offensive plays, and this might be an easy take, but I'll take it. I think Georgia Southern, after that 3rd and 30, and then 4th and 8, which, you know, I could argue the 4th and 8 was more important. But after the 4th and 8, Minnesota never faced another 3rd down. That defense looked gassed from the amount of plays it had to play in the second half. Is that, I mean, would you be on board with that, saying that that last drive kind of looked like Georgia Southern was out of gas?
I think that's fair to say. And, you know, that's a creation of their own doing when you get a special teams touchdown, which comes after a long extended Minnesota drive. And then you're right back on defense and they're driving again before you get the defensive score. I'm not sure the exact count, but that had to be about 20 straight snaps that the defense is on the field. But I think that also plays into, you know, your concerns about who did or didn't touch the ball. But, you know, of course, you've got a couple of horses in King and Wright who, you know, can carry the water for the team and move the ball. But again, that would be moving it for the most part in small increments, especially with how Minnesota was playing the Georgia Southern offense. And also, you've got to take stock of the fact that before the blocked field goal, before the fumble return for a touchdown, Georgia Southern was well behind in that game, so they weren't really in a position to be throwing their biggest backs into the middle of the line, especially when Minnesota was, you know, inviting that and just saying, hey, you're going to have to beat us inside. That's what they wanted. They were, they were poised to just jump on anybody coming through the middle. Not to say that they couldn't have broken it. I'm just saying that given the few, the small amount of plays that they ran in the second half, and the fact that they were decisively behind for the majority of those plays that they ran in the second half, I think that when you take all that into context, you can see why they didn't choose to, you know, go in between the tackles to one of those two guys as good as they are.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, I'm with you on that. I came away from it just feeling like there was
the offense didn't run a play while it was ahead in the game in the second half. They were behind 2 scores, and they never touched the ball. It went from hanging on for dear life and blocking a field goal and getting close to, you know, getting a strip sack and a return for a touchdown and now being up. But now the defense is right back on the field, and the next time they touch the ball, there's a couple seconds left, and you got to just throw caution to the wind and do whatever you can.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I mean, but we would agree that the Minnesota game was, you know, not a premium performance from Lunsford's bunch, but at least it was better than week one, obviously, and it was better, I think, than the main performance. I mean, would you agree with that? At least they showed progression?
Yeah, I would say that absolutely. As far as the ability to line up against a P5 team, a good defensive front, a good linebacking core, and if not knock them off the ball, at least give your guys some room to work, they absolutely did that. If you want to point at one thing that hurt them, it's, once again, penalties. There were I think a few more drives that could have been elongated, if not turned into points, if it's not for holding calls, you know, putting them behind the sticks. And once again, with just Tomlin there, who looks good, but again, you're working with the only quarterback you think you have for that day. When you get to a 2nd and 15, you're kind of in the mindset of, if we can't dive this ball twice for 13 yards, and we're already committed to a punt because you're not going to have your last quarterback just hanging around in the pocket waiting to make something happen.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. We'll leave Minnesota right there and kind of jump straight into Louisiana this week. Georgia Southern has a hell of a football team coming into Paulson Stadium this week. We're recording this on Tuesday night. If you're listening to this on time on Wednesday, you've probably heard all about how good Louisiana is. This isn't a fake good team like Maine was. This is a really, really good football team that, you know, is nationally ranked in a bunch of offensive categories. They lead the Sun Belt with 46 points per game. They lead the Sun Belt in rushing offense, 323 yards per game, 18 touchdowns already on the season, 7.5 yards per carry. A really, really, really good football team with really good players. So this is a really big test for Georgia Southern. I'm extremely excited and anxious to see how this Georgia Southern team responds coming off of the bye week, coming off of a pretty brutal loss at Minnesota. Brutal in the sense that you know, tough to take because it was right there for the taking. But a lot of this game, I think, will depend on the health of Shai Wirtz. And this week, Coach Lunsford has talked about it basically every time he's been in front of a media outlet. Already, Shai Wirtz, we know, practice throughout the bye week progressed slowly, Lunsford said. But on Monday, he talked twice about it, three times if you include the Sun Belt teleconference on Monday morning. Lunsford talked, you know, at length about Wirtz. I want to give you guys a chance to listen to what Coach Lunsford said on the Coach's Show with Georgia Southern Sports Network, Danny Reed, on Monday night. Here's what Lunsford had to say about Wirtz during the Coach's Show.
Well, I thought Shai, during the bye week, I thought did well. We progressed him slowly, but the things we were asking him to do, he was able to do them. Last night, I thought he was really sharp at practice. You know, and so now Tuesday and Wednesday will be big for him. Because those are our major work days during the week. And, you know, as long as he looks good, looks like he's healthy, looks like he can go help us win a football game, you know, we'll play him.
All right, so there you hear Coach Lunsford talking with Danny about Wirtz, and see if you can pick up any similarities between that and what he said here in front of the media on Monday afternoon in Statesboro. Here's what Lunsford said about Wirtz in front of the media on Monday afternoon.
You know, I was impressed with Shai last week during the bye week practices. We slowly progressed him in, but I mean, he was everything we were asking him to do, he was able to do it. Last night, he looked sharp. Tomorrow and Wednesday will be very telling, but I think he's coming along fine. And you know, hopefully, we see something Tuesday and Wednesday for him to be able to play this Saturday.
All right, so you hear Lunsford there twice. Basically repeating himself. Clearly he's got his talking points lined up for Wirtz, but it doesn't sound like what we were hearing in the weeks prior. You don't hear that day-to-day designation. You don't hear that game-time decision designation. So let's just jump right into what we think are the chances of Wirtz playing on Saturday, and should it matter that much? I think, you know, and I'll start, Mike, I think Shai Wirtz plays and starts in this one. And Georgia Southern can't really afford to play this one safely the way it played safely versus LSU in the second half by keeping Wirtz out, the way it played safely against Maine and Minnesota by keeping Wirtz out. This is a huge game for the Eagles, and they need their best player and players to play. If Wirtz is able to play, and I believe he is, he should play. It matters a whole lot if Shai plays or not. If he doesn't play, you know, I would think Louisiana wins this game. If he does play, I still think it's a toss-up. But I think, you know, Shai Wirtz playing in this game matters a great deal. And if I had to bet, I would say that Shai Wirtz starts and plays in this game. And that's the first time I've said that since LSU. Mike, what's your feeling around Shai Wirtz and the latest on his health moving into this game?
Yeah, I think a lot of this goes back to a few episodes ago where we took our turns running down the schedule and what we thought the Eagles were going to do. And, you know, we diverged later in the season, but I think that we were pretty much on the same path of there's not a whole lot of leeway for this team. There are a bunch of games that everybody thought that they would win. There are a bunch of games that everybody thought that they would lose. So far, it's gone to chalk. I mean, they were seconds away from, you know, snatching one away from Minnesota that was kind of counted up by a loss as most people before the season began, but I would say 90% of people would have had them at 1-2 coming in. Well, where that leaves you is one of the few games where it's really a toss-up. You've got the Western champion from last year in Louisiana Lafayette coming in. They're a good team. They were a team that was a little bit porous on defense last year, so you were hoping as a Georgia Southern fan that you can take advantage of that, but The defense has looked better. The offense has looked even better than it was last year when it was great. So I agree with you. You know, this is a game where if this is where you're going to put your foot in the ground and say a loss means that Georgia Southern's playing for bowl eligibility and the best bowl they can, but a win means that they're right back into the conversation as a Sun Belt contender. Yeah, if Shai Wirtz is able to play, you know that he's got the spirit to play, but if you think he's able to play, you got to send him out there. And to that, to everything that Lunsford said over the first couple of days of this week, I agree with you. He'd make a great politician. He knows how to keep everybody reading tea leaves there on what does he mean, what does he not mean. I'm kind of in agreement with you that I think that he's good to go, that he plays, that he probably starts. I also think that he's mitigating his words enough to where I think that there's definitely still some lingering pain, maybe some things that he can't do, one or two things that he can't do, and maybe the last couple of weeks of seeing Tomlin out on the field and what he can and can't do gives Georgia Southern a chance to give Shai a break where they can, maybe do some things that he wouldn't be able to do or wouldn't want to be asked to do in his condition now that you've seen that Tomlin can do those things.
All right, let me ask you this about Wirtz and Tomlin and the quarterback position in general. If you know, there was such a thing in Vegas as an over-under for quarterbacks played for Georgia Southern in this game, and they set it at 1.5 quarterbacks taking snaps, you think Georgia Southern plays two quarterbacks at any point in this game?
I think they do.
Really?
Yep.
And I mean, I guess I, to that just I would ask. Go ahead.
Yeah, I don't know if you want me to expound. Kind of what I just said. I think that, you know, Shai, they've been cloudy on what exactly the nature of the injury is, but given the slowness of the information coming out to us, I have to think that it's maybe not something serious because they've said all along that he's been dressing, he's been practicing, he could play if he absolutely had to, but that also tells me that it's something that, you know, is taking its time coming back and maybe is one of those things that doesn't heal throughout a season. It's how much can you put up with, how much can you play with, you know, like an ankle sprain that just won't go away. So to that regard, I think that if they get into a close matchup, which I think it'll be, you know, maybe you see, in maybe not in crunch time, but just in an opportunistic time, you see Tomlin come out there and do something that they want him to do.
Well, I mean, I guess to that I would ask, what does Tomlin do, you know, significantly better or different than Wirtz that would allow you? So if you bring Tomlin in, what now do you have that you didn't have with Wirtz? You know what I mean?
Right. I would just, and this again is me just shooting from the hip, I would say that knowing what we know about Wirtz's injury, which isn't much, but that it's a nagging injury to his throwing arm, I would say that if you get into a third and short situation where if Wirtz is back there, you would have to imagine that the defense is keen on anybody but him taking a run somewhere. Maybe Tomlin's there, and then it makes it a little bit tougher to figure out where the ball's going because he's just as likely to take the ball and put his shoulder down and take a hit than anybody else.
Yeah, and I've heard a bunch of people kind of...
He has been a very good downhill runner, I'll give him that. In the two games he's played plus the LSU game, he has not been intimidated one bit. He hasn't necessarily always broken the run, but he has not been shy about sticking his nose right into people. And that's something that if you're the coaching staff and Wirtz's arm isn't, you know, quite up to 100% yet, maybe you think if you can get that couple of yards by having Tomlin make the read, maybe you go ahead and do that.
Yeah, and I've heard people say that you could, like, you know, maybe you could line Tomlin up at quarterback and even at some point in time split Wirtz out, not use him out there, but split him out and at least show a different look. I'm not sure that I'm on board with Wirtz lining up anywhere besides quarterback, and I'm not sure that that's even in the plans. I've just heard people kind of talk about that and wonder aloud if there's some formation or setup that Georgia Southern would use with both on the field. Again, I don't know that.
Yeah. If I was going to go that route, I'd go the opposite with Wirtz taking the snap and Tomlin hanging around somewhere.
Yeah. But I mean, so that, I guess that's a possibility. I just don't know that lining up either one, not at quarterback, you know, if I'm a defender, I don't necessarily have to even worry about the other one. That kind of limits you, especially in an option offense that kind of puts you at 10 versus 11, which is the opposite of what.
In my opinion, whenever teams line up with those dual quarterback sets, usually it's, you know, the whole premise is making the defense think too much, but it always seems to me that the offense is outthinking the defense when they do that.
Yeah, we don't want that. We don't want too much thinking going on, that's for damn sure.
Thinking's for preparation and the days leading up to it. Once you're on the field, you play.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. All right, let's jump to one change on the depth chart this week. And I touched on this last week. Donald Rutledge has moved into the first string strong safety spot ahead of Daryl Baker Jr., alongside Kendrick Duncan, who's really playing well so far this season. I guess, you know, for me, I like this move because of what it shows. I think the Georgia Southern coaching staff, obviously now it means what it says when it stresses competition, you know, and playing time based on performance. You know, I think Baker played poorly against Minnesota. There's no way around it. He missed, on that first score for Minnesota that went the distance. Johnson's first score for Minnesota, Baker missed
tackle and threw a block.
Yeah, missed a tackle and kind of helped out Minnesota in the process at midfield. Then later, in the first half, there was kind of a miscommunication, and you never really know immediately when there's miscommunication kind of whose fault it is. But there was some kind of a miscommunication there in the end zone on Johnson's second touchdown. And after that, we saw Rutledge come in and play the majority of the time. But, you know, again, I think Rutledge played above average, not flawless. But, you know, in sticking with that, quote, next man up mentality, I like that Rutledge is being given a shot. Baker's still going to get plenty of defensive reps and plenty of defensive snaps, and he may well earn his starting role back. But I'm 100% on board for giving D-Rut a shot to make some plays, and I think that we're starting to see the safety who lines up across from KDJ at the back end of this Georgia Southern defense is going to get a lot of action. You're going to see a lot of action at you, especially in the passing game. And so I think giving a guy like Rutledge, a graduated senior now or a graduated player for Georgia Southern, the transfer from Savannah State, I like giving him this shot because you saw on film, you know, we saw it. So I know the coaching staff saw it. Rutledge played better than Baker. And now the next game, Rutledge is ahead of Baker. I'm on board with that. That's the way it should be, right?
Yeah, I agree with you, in giving credit to the coaching staff for doing what they said they do. And it's one thing to pay lip service to everything during summer workouts and fall camp where you hear the same thing from every coach on every team in the country about how all 22 positions are up for grabs when you know that most of them usually aren't. And there are going to be battles at some positions, but a lot of times you see those kind of get closed off when the season begins. So it's good to see that evaluation carries over into real-time play. You know, Coach Lunsford said it at the press conference on Monday. He said it multiple times this year. This Georgia Southern team is not playing up to where they think they can play, and whether that's, you know, team concepts as a whole with penalties and all that, or whether it's individual plays and execution from guys in certain spots that aren't giving them what they need, I think that's a credit to this coach and staff that they're going to be willing to change it up to try to get someone else in there who can better help the team. And you can only hope that they preach culture up and down and the guys seem to buy into it, you know, helping one another out. You know, hopefully this isn't taken as a slight by Daryl Baker, because as you said, they're going to need him. They're going to face some Sun Belt teams that like to wing it all over the place. And at some point they're going to need 4 and 5 defensive backs in the game. And if he's not in the starting lineup, he's going to be one of the first guys whose number's called. So the way I see it, you know, right now you're going with the best that you've got, but it's also a chance to build more depth and more experience for times where you're going to need it in the next month or two.
Yeah, I'm with you. I would have liked to have seen Georgia Southern kind of do the same thing that it did at strong safety with that dog linebacker position. Now, Randy Wade and Alvin Ward, the 1 and 2 string dog linebackers, have played really well so far, but Quinn Williams currently listed as the 3rd string dog there. I don't read too much into that because Quinn's going to get his playing time after 2 sacks against Minnesota. Mike, I know you're on board with Quinn Williams getting sacks.
I mean, he goes after the quarterback like he's going after a steak or something.
Yeah. And I know Brian Johnson heard that one. So I think, you know, it is nice to see, like we said, the depth chart being adjusted based on performance. You know, that's not rocket science. That's the way it should be. Let's jump further into Louisiana. I think in this game, it does not take long when you're kind of sitting down laying out the matchup of Louisiana versus Georgia Southern. It doesn't take long to see what this game is going to come down to. Georgia Southern needs to outrush Louisiana, and that sounds crazy to even consider that that's up for debate. Georgia Southern, you know, if they can outrush their opponents, they have a pretty good record. Since 2014, when they win the rushing battle, Georgia Southern is 36-12. When they lose the rushing battle, they're 0-17. So, you know, it's no secret what needs to happen. But again, you're looking at a team that's averaging 323 yards per game on the ground. Georgia Southern's rush defense is number two in the conference, allowing only 89 yards per game. But here's the thing that stuck out for me as far as the rushing goes. Louisiana has 18 rushing touchdowns, by far the most in the conference. Georgia Southern has four. So Louisiana has 14 more rushing touchdowns than Georgia Southern, and that is wild to even consider. Another, I think, important stat in this one will be Louisiana's third down defense versus Georgia Southern's woeful third down offense. Georgia Southern, by far the worst team in the conference, converting 17.6% of their third downs. On the other end, Louisiana's third down defense is number one in the conference, 27.5% they're allowing to opponents. And they're both kind of right there in the middle, the opposite way around. Louisiana fifth offensively in third down conversions, and Georgia Southern defensively fifth in opponent third down conversions. So I guess for me right now, looking at this game kind of 3 or 4 days out, Georgia Southern wins the rushing battle, they win this game. And if Georgia Southern can just be okay on third downs, you don't have to convert it at a 50% clip, but you got to do better than 17%. Okay, you can't convert, you can't go 1 of 9 here. You can't go 2 of 10 in this game. You need something like 4 of 10. And I think you can win this game if you do those two things: outrush Louisiana and win the third down battle. For you, Mike, what does this game look like on paper, and kind of what key matchups are you looking at?
I would say that to your points you made, I would agree with one and have the other one kind of up in the air. And it might not be the two that you, or the ones that you think. I think that Georgia Southern can win the game without outrushing Lafayette. I think that at this point, I know that all the mythos and the legend of Georgia Southern offense is all about rushing. I think that right now Louisiana's a team that rushes the ball better and will stick with the rush longer. However, I think it's Georgia Southern's rushing defense that can not only mitigate what they can do on the ground, but also mitigate how many opportunities Louisiana has to score the ball. And to me, what it's really going to come down to is what you said about third downs, and maybe not even so much what Georgia Southern's offense does on third down, but what it does on first and second down. Because I think if you look at the entirety of it, the third down conversion rating of, you said, what, 17%?
Yeah, 17%.
A lot of it is not due to what they do on third down. It's what they haven't done on first and second down. And that's kind of beating a drum. We've brought that up the last couple of years. Georgia Southern needs to find a way to gain yards on first and second down to make it where their rushing offense, while not as explosive as the Raging Cajuns and maybe not gaining as many yards as the Raging Cajuns, can have manageable third downs, keep the sticks moving, and by virtue of that, keep Louisiana's offense off the field. That'll put them in a spot where maybe they can't run it as much as they want to. Maybe it gets them a little bit out of sync. And, you know, in my experience, the more that you get teams out of their comfort zone, it doesn't matter how talented they are. If they aren't doing what they want to do, it makes them a little worse for the wear. So I'm not saying that this is, you know, going to be an easy assignment for the Georgia Southern rushing defense. It'll be their toughest one of the year as far as the rushing defense goes. The first three teams they've played have looked to pass more than run, but I think that they are up to the task. They've got a great linebacking core, and if they can keep Louisiana behind schedule, while the offense, Georgia Southern offense, can keep itself ahead of schedule, I think you could have a situation there where maybe the Cajuns do have more explosive plays and outrush Georgia Southern, but by virtue of efficiency, Georgia Southern's able to control the clock, control the game, force the Cajuns out of their comfort zone, and be able to get away with a victory.
Yeah, and look, Louisiana's not going to be flawless on the offensive side. They committed 13 penalties last week, so you will have an opportunity.
Proof defense, but still not a great one either.
Yeah, and look, they're not, you know, I think they could play with Minnesota, but I don't think, you know, there's some juggernaut that Georgia Southern is not capable of beating. I definitely think Georgia Southern matches up talent-wise with this Louisiana team. Mike, you would agree with that?
Yeah, and not to play the old game of A versus B versus C, but, you know, Louisiana, in the opening week, they played a good game against Mississippi State but weren't really in it and lost by 10.
Yeah.
Georgia Southern played a game against a Minnesota team that I don't think is any worse than Mississippi State. You know, I'll list my Twitter handle for all the SEC fans of your podcast.
Yeah, I agree with you on that.
On. But I don't think they're much better or worse. And you could argue that Georgia Southern shouldn't have been as close to winning as they were. But at the end of the day, they were every bit as close to winning their game as Louisiana was with theirs. And, you know, it's all going to come down to what you execute well with on game day when the two of you face each other.
Yeah, and let's touch on one more thing from this game, and then we'll get you guys to my interview with Cody Juno previewing the Raging Cajuns and kind of scouting out their personnel. Mike, this is obviously the first Sun Belt home game of the year, first Sun Belt game of the year. I've seen a lot of people kind of guessing at what the attendance might be and what it needs to be and kind of what Georgia Southern's record is when you get X number of people in the stands. You know, I don't, from what I've seen in, you know, the last year plus, I don't know that I'm ever going to expect more than 20,000 in the stands. I know that Georgia Southern is capable of packing more in than 20,000 into Paulson Stadium, but I just haven't seen anything that would lead me to believe that this game would attract more than that. I guess for you, what would be your kind of estimate or kind of range of attendance, and how important is that? We hear Lunsford and the players talk about how important it is to have the fans and the support, but how important, I guess, how big of a difference do you think it would be to have 19,000 there as opposed to 24,000, 25,000 there?
Well, as far as the crowd effect on the game, I really think it just depends on how the game goes, how much everybody's into it. You know, I've heard that place definitely loud with 15,000 people in it.
Yeah.
I've heard it kind of, you know, subdued with 19,000. And that's even, you know, with Georgia Southern losing with 15,000 in the stands and Georgia Southern winning with 19,000. Every game's a little bit different. There's a different mood to every game. So I don't think that the exact head count has much of a basis on how intimidating or how much of an effect the crowd can be. What I will say is I think it'll be a good crowd size. It's family day, family weekend. That traditionally has been one of the biggest weekends for Georgia Southern. They're the only, I believe they're the only FBS football team in the state of Georgia playing a game that day. So that'll help for people who would rather stay at home and watch other teams around the state. You know, I think that, you know, as far as getting more than 20,000 in the stands, maybe it'll happen this week. Maybe it won't. I think it's got a slight chance too. I think that overall, winning's always going to help. And at the end of the day, I think that Georgia Southern just needs to work on getting better opponents into Paulson Stadium. And I get that this is a conference game. You can't control if it's Louisiana or Georgia State or Texas State or Appalachian State or whoever coming in there. But there's one or two more games a year where you can get an opponent, and Maine's not going to get 20,000, you know. In a few years, BYU, you know, that's a big name, but they're not going to travel 5,000 people across the continent.
Yeah.
Maybe that'll move the trigger, but how many people around the southeast are going to show up because BYU's in town? Not many. You look around the conference, and every one of the Sun Belt teams is getting SEC and ACC teams to come and play in their house. And I think it's time for Georgia Southern to take a step back and ask the question, it doesn't matter if it's Wake Forest instead of Clemson. It doesn't matter if it's Vanderbilt instead of Alabama. You got to wonder why everybody else can get one of those teams into their house in Georgia Southern camp.
Yeah, that's kind of a bigger picture thing, but I'm with you on that. I think, and I do think that is something they're aware of and that they at least, you know, internally acknowledge.
I just think that even the buildup to that, you know, even three, you know, a year in the future, two games in the future, one game in the future from when that matchup eventually happens, there's going to be so much influx. You're going to start to see the effects of getting one of those teams into Paulson way before that team ever shows up for that Saturday afternoon.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. And instead of scheduling teams, and obviously the scheduling happens way in advance, but instead of scheduling teams like Maine, if you want an FCS opponent, maybe try Mercer or Kennesaw State or somebody like that where, you know, the fans kind of care and know who the team is instead of the Maine Black Bears, which we know is an SEC juggernaut.
Well, I mean, I think Maine's a good team. I think they're going to have a good season, but you can't tell me that Maine brought more fans in South Carolina State, who's not by any means an FCS threat to win anything, brought last year.
Right, right. Yeah, and so I guess we'll leave that right there. I do want to say that I hope the soundtrack is a little better this week at Paulson Stadium. I did not hear Mo Bamba once during the Maine game, and I heard Old Town Road like four times. So if you're listening to this, dude who's responsible, play some Mo Bamba.
Well, you're currently talking to someone who has turned 34 today as we speak, and all I can say is you got to
Well, happy birthday, Mike.
Man, it's going to be different. Yeah,
my birthday is on the 26th. That's wild.
Oh.
I didn't even know that.
Well, that's my sister's birthday. She's way more important than you.
Look at us, Mike. We should celebrate with BJ in the press box. You want to let everyone know, Mike, how to follow your stuff? How do you read your stuff?
Yeah, you can read me in the Statesboro Herald. You can read me online at statesboroherald.com. We put out videos. Eagles Nest should be out in the next couple of days on statesboroherald.com. And on game days, you can follow me on Twitter at Herald GS Sports.
All right, and for us at the Savannah Morning News, obviously find all of our Georgia Southern coverage at savannahnow.com/sports. You can follow me on Twitter at Jadon, JAUDON, Sports, SMN. You can also sign up on SavannahNow.com's homepage for our free Georgia Southern Extra newsletter. It has all the news and notes each week for your inbox on Wednesday mornings. And it's free, which I know you guys really, really appreciate. So thank you guys for listening. We'll catch up with you next week. And coming up is my interview with Cody Janot scouting the Raging Cajuns. All right, Georgia Southern fans, we have a new offer for you guys at SavannahNow.com. We want you guys to check it out. It's a newsletter focused on Georgia Southern athletics and Georgia Southern athletics only. This is a free opportunity for you guys to get caught up on all the latest news on the Eagles, whether it be on the football field, basketball court, baseball field, or what have you. But go join the mailing list for the newsletter. And this is how you do it. Go to SavannahNow.com and look on the right side of the homepage. Click Get Our Newsletters and go from there. The newsletter will have a blog post once a week, as well as other relevant Georgia Southern stories, opportunities to subscribe to the podcast, and other insider notes that you can't find anywhere else. Subscribe today. All right, we're joined now by Cody Janot of ESPN 1420. In Lafayette, Louisiana. Cody is joining us to scout the Raging Cajuns ahead of Saturday's 6 p.m. kickoff at Paulson Stadium between Louisiana and Georgia Southern. We'll get an overview of how their season has gone so far. Then we'll touch on both sides of the ball and then get Cody's prediction for how Saturday will ultimately shake out in the Sun Belt Conference opener. So, Cody, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, absolutely. Travis, glad to be with you.
All right, man. Well, so we're starting into conference play now, and obviously for Georgia Southern, things haven't gone too well, but they've played some stiff competition, and you know, I know Georgia Southern fans are kind of still waiting to see what their team will be this year, with a lot of questions kind of still unanswered. For Louisiana, at least from the outside looking in, it seems like a lot of their questions have been answered, and in a positive way. Can you kind of catch us up on Louisiana's 3-1 start so far?
Yeah, so I mean, I think for the Cajuns, you know, you had the opener in the Mercedes-Benz Superdome against Mississippi State, and you kind of kick yourself and say, "What if?" In that one, I think maybe similar to the Georgia Southern's finish a couple weeks ago up at Minnesota. You know, you felt like you had an opportunity if you're the Cajuns to take down a Power Five opponent. Just turned the ball over a little bit too much in that one. I think the first game of the year, you could see maybe a little bit of the inexperience and maybe nerves. You know, an interesting factoid about this Louisiana team is there are 86 either first or second year players. Now, they may be juniors or seniors as far as classification goes, but first or second year players into Billy Napier's program, with 50 of those 86 being true first year players. So, you know, I think some of that kind of played into that Mississippi State game. But fast forward, you welcome Liberty home the next week. And after a slow start, really outclassed the Flames, scoring 28 unanswered to go ahead and take care of that one, 35-14. You know, the Texas Southern game, I think, was refreshing for Cajun fans because Louisiana was, I think, a 47-point favorite at the offshore books. But they went out and they handled their business. And that's not something maybe this program is accustomed to doing, right? You know, you let the FCS foe kind of hang around for a little bit, maybe in years past. And so I think that was really refreshing for Cajun fans to see. And then last week, going on the road into a, you know, a, I think a, what's going to end up being a good Ohio Bobcat football team, a team that was picked to win the not only the MAC East, but the win the MAC championship as well. And kind of get off to a slow start offensively. So we've seen the defense pick things up over the last 2 weeks. The offense, it was 10-6 at half, but then came out and rolled to a 45-25 victory to get to the 3-1 mark, heading into the Sun Belt Conference opener at Georgia Southern this weekend. You know, that game at Ohio kicked off a really daunting stretch of contest for the Cajuns, where you know, they're including that one, it's going to be three of the next four on the road, and they get Sun Belt heavyweights, Georgia Southern this week, come home for a midweek contest against App State on October 9, and then get rewarded the very next Thursday by heading into Jonesboro to face Arkansas State. So a critical stretch and kind of a brutal stretch of the Cajun schedule that they've embarked on here.
Yeah, that is brutal. Georgia Southern will face kind of a similar thing later in the year with Monroe, Troy, and App State. But that's brutal to go on the road at Georgia Southern and then on a short week to get App State on a Thursday.
Well, they do get – so the Cajuns will play on Saturday. Then they'll have the week off and come
okay.
Home on the Wednesday and then turn around and play the next Thursday. So there is a little bit of a break there. But, you know, part of that oddity in the schedule, too, is Louisiana is going to play exactly one home game in the month of October, and that's going to be on a Wednesday. And they are only going to play one other contest, so only two games in the month of October and not a home Saturday game. So that's another one of those quirky schedules that, you know, I think the fan base rightfully so not pleased with. But as we've seen with the Sun Belt Conference and its TV partner and its deal with ESPN, when you are one of the teams, whether it's Georgia Southern, Louisiana, Arkansas State, App, or Troy, you're going to draw those midweek contests.
Right.
And as a result, you get the TV exposure, but you kind of lose a little bit of that Saturday feel. So it's a little bit of give and take there. But yeah, another quirky part of the schedule there.
Yeah, it is an interesting topic to think, you know, it's teams like Coastal and Texas State and, you know, other kind of teams at the bottom of the conference that aren't getting those Thursday night games, but they are getting probably that bonus Saturday home game. So it's a blessing and a curse. But so far for Louisiana, the offense, you know, at least on paper, and, you know, having watched that Mississippi State game, I was actually in Baton Rouge for the Georgia Southern LSU massacre that it was. So I was watching that Mississippi State Louisiana game pretty closely that afternoon. They looked like they at least stacked up with the SEC West foe. So far since then, and even in that game, their offense has been rolling. I guess for you, being close to the program and close to the team, what for you has been you know, the key or the keys for this offense really, really getting it going?
Well, look, their ability to run the football, and we saw that a year ago when they kind of, you know, came out of nowhere, a team that a season ago was picked to fourth, I believe, in the West, and wound up winning the division and playing in the inaugural, you know, Sun Belt Championship game. It was the backfield, you know, the three-headed monster that the Cajuns possess, excuse me, in Trey Regis, Elijah Mitchell, who was named Sun Belt Conference Offensive Player of the Week on Monday for his performance over the weekend, 143 yards and three scores. And don't forget about Raymond Kale, kind of the speedster of the bunch. So it's definitely the Louisiana run game. You know, when you look at where the Cajuns rank in a national perspective when it comes to rushing offense, you know, they are third behind Navy and Oklahoma, and they're averaging 323 yards a contest on the ground. You know, and I talked about Elijah winning that Sun Belt Conference Player of the Week award. He averaged 8.4 yards per carry.
And Trey Regis
averaged 8.6, and they did it not just on a few carries. Mitchell had 17. And Regis had 15 carries. So, and you know, the other interesting part about that too is the long runs for either one was 33 and 22. So it's not as if it came on big giant gainers and then everything else was bottled up. These guys are consistently falling forward, and you know that's going to help because you know the quarterback in Levi Lewis is still you know, relatively inexperienced. He played some as a backup last year. You know. Rotated really every fourth series with Andre Nunez a season ago, but this year he, you know, it's his show, and you know, it really helps them get going. And you know, I'd be remiss if we didn't mention the big guys up front, specifically Robert Hunt and Kevin Dotson along that right side. You know, really, really helped that offense go.
So I guess for you, do you think that and the rushing numbers speak for themselves, 7.5 yards per carry, 18 rushing touchdowns already, like you said, 323 yards a game, almost 1,300 yards already. Is the, I guess, renewed running game, is that a product of Louisiana wanting to be more run heavy, or is it a product of the runs they've called so far have worked that greatly?
You know, I think it's a product of, you know, it's when you know, because Billy Napier talks about this quite often. You know, when they arrived on campus 2 years ago, they felt the offense that they inherited, you know, especially at that tailback position, there it was not a bear covered. Conversely, he'll tell you this is really what he considers year one of the defense, right? Almost there was a year zero because, you know, Coach Napier will tell you that they felt that the cover was really extremely bare on the defensive side of the football. But, you know, the Cajuns, I think you would stack that trio of backs up against anybody, not just in the Sun Belt, but in the country. And so when you add that with the offensive line that's had a few injuries, but coming into the season, I think was the third most experienced offensive line in America behind Oregon and the guys up at ULM. So the Cajuns want to run the football, make no mistake about it. Now, they feel like they've got some weapons outside, and you can look at Jamarcus Bradley, and you know, Billy, he's a guy that Billy Napier would access. You know, could he have a chance to play on Sunday? Billy Napier's answer is no, he will play on Sundays. But you know, that offense is going to, when it's executing at its finest, it's going to go through those three guys in the backfield, 9, 15, and 4.
Okay, yeah, and so before we move to the defensive side of the ball, I know you kind of hit on this a little earlier. Can you kind of run through briefly each of those three guys in the backfield and kind of, you know, how they differ, kind of, you know, what situations each one excels in?
Sure. Well, from a situational standpoint, the Cajuns will rotate those guys in, and they're comfortable in any situation in short yardage with any of the three backs. Now, if you want the quote-unquote bigger, heavier, more physical back, that's going to be number 9, Trey Regis. You know, I think I would describe his running style as more of a bowling ball. The guy rarely falls backward, excuse me, when he gets hit. Elijah Mitchell is, I think, more of the all-purpose, well-rounded back in the sense that he can catch the ball a little bit better out of the backfield than Regis can. All three of them can catch it. He's got the power inside, but he's also got a bit more of a speed burst then Regis, and then Raymond Colley, the lone senior of the bunch. He's the speedster. He's the guy. You know, he's the track star coming out of high school. Very, very involved in the Cajuns kickoff return game. Took two back a couple years ago in the season opener against Southeastern Louisiana. And so his forte is the speed, but the Cajuns are not afraid, like I said, in any situation. You know, if he's got the hand and it's his turn and it's third and one, they will, you know, run inside power, ISO, whatever it may be, the dive with Kyle, who's quote unquote the speed back.
And I guess let me just one more thing on the offense. I do want to touch on this because Georgia Southern, they have ran a remarkably few plays, and that's kind of due to a bunch of things. Last year, they ran the fewest amount of plays in the country. That was by design. This year, they don't want to be, you know, up tempo by any means, but, you know, they're running 40 plays a game, 40 plays last game, I think 50 the game before. For you, Louisiana's tempo on offense, I guess, is it heavily leaning one way or the other as far as how many plays they want to get off and how quick they want to go, or is it more middle of the road?
They're going to be, I think middle of the road may be the best way to describe it. They're going to be on the faster side of that, if that makes sense. They're going to want to push the tempo and the pace. But, you know, Billy Napier's talked about this too, that he understands that he learned that, I think, last year in his first year as a head coach. He's also the play caller for the Cajuns. And, you know, there are times that your defense needs you to slow it down, right? Yeah. There are times that the defense might want you to go fast. And so they're able to mix both things in. But I think in an ideal setting, you know, they're from a tempo perspective, they're going to be a little bit more up-tempo. They're not going to be Chip Kelly Oregon fast, you know, running like that all the time. But if they, I think, have their druthers, they'd rather be a little quicker than slower.
All right, now let's jump to the defensive side of the ball. I guess overview of the defense for Louisiana, you know, it's easy to, you know, if you're scouting this team as we are kind of from afar, if you're looking at Louisiana, it's easy to fall in love with the offense, and rightfully so. They've put up, you know, incredible numbers so far. But their scoring defense is number two in the conference as well, allowing 21 a game. I guess Louisiana's defense overview, kind of what stood out for you so far?
Yeah, so you go back, I guess let's go back to that first game of the season against Mississippi State. And you know, it was a quick hitting touchdown on the opening possession. And then, you know, the big takeaway from that game was, oh man, the run defense is still kind of where it was. And I think the first thing that we need to recognize is that Kylan Hall, the tailback at State, is going to play on Sundays as well. I think that's one. But two, really talking to Billy Napier after the game, he said, man, it was just a couple gap control issues. You know, a lot of times it was we had 9 of the 11 guys, 10 of the 11 guys, everybody executing their job, but one or two people. And seemingly over the last couple weeks, they've been able to get more 11 on 11 plays, if that makes sense. Everybody doing their job. And, you know, they continue to start slow the next week at Liberty, but over the last 2 weeks, they've really, really got off, you know, off to a good start quickly on defense, forcing, you know, opponents to punt on their first few possessions. And the other thing that really sticks out about where this Cajun defense is third down conversions, and the fact that they have really, really limited the opposing offenses, you know, when it comes to third down conversions, which is something that they did not do a year ago, right? A year ago, they struggled to get off of the field. But this year, Ron Roberts and his crew are really, really finding a way to get off the field. In fact, they're holding opponents to just 14 of 51 on third down. So that, you know, that to me has kind of been the big difference, is they're finding a way to get off of the football field.
Yeah, and that does not bode well for Georgia Southern, because so far their third down conversions offensively are really, you know, they've been really bad. 17% for Georgia Southern so far. So they're dead last in the conference in offensive third down conversions, and Louisiana number one in opposing third down conversions. So I have a feeling I know how that matchup at least will go. A little deeper on the defense, Cody, kind of what will the scheme be for the defense as far as, you know, either four down linemen or three down linemen? And does Louisiana, you know, are they blitz heavy, or are they kind of tend to lay back and let the plays come to them? Kind of what's their MO on that side of the ball?
Yeah, so from a pressure front, they'll mix it. They'll bring it. They'll sit back and play coverage, just kind of depending on the feel that Ronnie Roberts has. You know, they're going to be in a three-man front, but they'll walk a linebacker down in the box a lot. You know, so technically, they're probably a 3-4, but in reality, you'll see a four-man front, and, you know, you'll probably see the star safety. You know, so are they playing a true nickel? No, they've got a guy they feel can come down and stop the run, get back in the pass if he needs. But if you look at it, it's you know, technically I think a 3-4 defense, but they'll walk that guy down a good bit, and you know they'll run some variations on the back end as well.
All right, and then before we get your prediction and kind of overview for Saturday, is there any other kind of, you know, third team or third party guys, special teams, either punter, kicker, returner, anything like that, that Georgia Southern fans should be aware of?
Well, you know, I think in the kickoff game, Kenny Almendarez has done an excellent job of you know, getting balls deep in the end zone and really kind of setting the tone there. Done a good job of you know, not allowing the opposing offense to have a good starting spot. And then, you know, one of the turning points in Saturday's game was a fumbled punt by Ohio that was recovered by Louisiana at the 2-yard line. Mm-hmm. You know, they've got the Aussie rugby style punter in Reese Burns. And so he needs to be more consistent, but I think they're improving there. You know, field goal kicking is a question for the Cajuns. Stevie Arteague, you know, missed three field goals against Liberty, missed another one on Saturday at Ohio. And I'm interested, and haven't talked to coach about this, but interested to see, you know, does he become a little bit more aggressive maybe? Does he decide to go for it on fourth down,
yeah,
you know, because of the kicking situation that they're currently in?
All right, well, Cody, now can't put it off any longer. You got a prediction for Saturday? And if not, then at least how you think this one shapes up?
You know, I'll be very honest with you. Despite the Cajuns' 3-1 record, despite Georgia Southern's 1-2 record, and you know, I guess a lot of this depends on is Shai Wirtz available? Is he not? But I was frankly surprised, Travis, yesterday when I looked up the line and saw that Louisiana was a 3.5 point favorite.
Yeah,
it kind of took me a second there to kind of say, "Whoa, you know, what's going on there?" And so, you know, this is one of those games where it's going to be the Louisiana's second consecutive road game. You're opening up conference play, and you know, it's I think a lot of unknowns. You know, going into this game, look, I think it's going to be a very tightly contested contest between these two teams. And again, the unknown of the option, right? And the different variations that they run,
yeah,
they being Georgia Southern, you know, it's not something that, you know, Willie Napier said today, this league actually does a really good job of throwing several different concepts at you with that, you know, that flex bone option, gun spread option. Whatever, you know, variant that Coach Lunsford's running presents to you. So I think the Cajuns are going to have, you know, a little bit of figuring that part out. And then the other thing, when you look at the series between these two teams, you know, they've only met twice, right? Believe it or not. And the series is tied at 1. And with the Cajuns going into Postal Stadium a couple of years ago, getting a victory, and then it was basically the throttling of Louisiana 2 years ago that solidified Chad Lunsford as you know, to get the job, and conversely was probably the final nail in Mark Hudspeth's coffin as the Cajuns head coach. So there's a little bit of history between these two teams. I'll tell you this. I'm really excited to get to Statesboro on Saturday and watch these two teams go at it. If Louisiana is able to run its offense and not muddle things down, kind of like they did in the first half, I think they're going to have to start much faster on offense. I'm confident in the Cajun defense. It's been playing much better. Now, again, this is a very different test in the fact that you've got a quarterback and the option and how it operates that I think is going to, you know, serve as a big test for Louisiana. But I think this is going to be a great contest between two great teams. I'm going to lean Louisiana slightly here, but I think it's going to be one of those, you know, knock them out contest that you're on the road in conference play. You don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah, I think I'm with you on that one. I think I'm leaning Louisiana, but like you said, a lot of this depends on the health of quarterback Shai Wertz. Cody, do you want to let everyone know how to follow you on Twitter and kind of how to track your stuff?
Yeah, so you can, if you're interested, I'm on the radio, ESPN 1420. We have a very cool free mobile app, Monday through Friday, 7 to 9 a.m. Central. And then you can listen to me Saturdays on the sideline, handling the sideline duties for Louisiana, and then on Twitter at CJunot, C-J-U-N-O-T.
Great stuff, Cody. Thanks for helping us out, helping us scout the Raging Cajuns, and we'll see you in Statesboro on Saturday.
Absolutely, Travis. It's been a pleasure.
Oh, he will. Adrian Peterson is taking care of things right now.
The Wesley Fields. Touchdown. Georgia Southern.
Mass swing on the way.